Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Hi gang, welcome to the Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Oh, Manchester United were better, Everton got a win, and Brendan Rodgers' boys march on. Ooh. Well, 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 here we are once again, everybody, with Luke Moore, Pete Donaldson, Jim Campbell and Marcus Speller.
Not you lot, again.
Yeah.
It's boring, isn't it?
Isn't it?
We are on tour, baby!
Pete and I have started to dress the same, accidentally.
The Chip Shop boys are wearing black jeans and underwhelmingly less than bright red top. Yeah, like a corally red top, salmony. Yeah.
Important to set the scene on an audio feature.
Yes. Feff off.
People can now imagine it in their minds.
Yeah.
You dressed off in electric orange.
Now, there's something I need to address.
Oh.
One or two people tweeted me about Manchester City beating Crystal Palace.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting, actually, because obviously it looks like a 2-0 victory, but...
Put your feet up, chaps.
If you start to peel back the layers...
Yeah, okay.
Does anyone want a cup of tea?
You've already got one, Jim.
Yeah.
Stop mugging off the listeners. Right. And allow me to do so.
I think you should stop mugging off the listeners and you should stop mugging off the listeners with your opinions.
Yeah. It's funny actually because...
I've dropped a tub of acid. I'm out of here. I'm just bored. I just knew this was coming, see?
Yeah. Did you?
It's not a gubbin.
One thing that everyone said about that Manchester City performance...
They're going to get bummed.
What was the... the word professional.
Yeah.
People said it was a professional performance. But what does that allude to? That alludes to the fact that they needed to be on their game. And I think Guardiola, he looked at those, he did the same research I did, and he thought to himself, this is a tricky game. We need to respect this thing. They need to be out there. Because Man City are a better team than Crystal Palace, of course, Jim. They went to Ellis Park, but they had to be very, very professional. Very, very professional. I mean, you think about that Benteke header, which Edison flicks off the bar.
Well, that was a brilliant header.
It was a brilliant,
and a brilliant
header.
Save.
And of course, you know, that goes in, and then inevitably Palace come back to get a point. So, you know, it's margins, Jim. So I think with that performance, Guardiola vindicated what I said.
I come away from that game thinking,
yeah,
will the similarities between Marcus Speller and Pep Guardiola
ever end?
What they both achieved ever end?
Yeah,
they'll start.
Yeah, they are locked in.
I'll start.
Yeah, they are locked like two star-crossed lovers.
Indeed.
They will never be separated in the conversational tie.
All right, look, guys, we need to carry on with the running order.
But
guys.
Being serious, if you look at the level
serious.
Of the performance, this could actually genuinely be a real platform for Man City to build on.
Well, clearly, they're 2 points.
It's a scalp
closer,
for them, isn't it?
They're 2 points close to Liverpool, Jim.
It's an excellent point.
And
I knew as soon as I saw the full time result 2-0, my first instinct was Marcus is going to try and spin this as a vindication and as a victory for Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace
on
Monday.
No, it's not spinning it. It's just telling what happened. Yeah. They needed a professional performance. They respected the opponent because they realised what's been going on, and they were very right to do that. And on another day, it could have been 3-2 to Palace, but obviously it wasn't.
Yeah. They made their point with a 2-0 loss.
In which they can see 21 shots and 72% of the possession.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
We're not managers, are we, Marcus?
No, exactly.
So what do we know?
What would we know?
Look, Have you boys ever played the game?
I did on Saturday.
That rubbish.
Yeah. Right, let us move on to Manchester United. Liverpool, much better from Manchester United. Yeah. Solskjaer playing a 3-5-2. Ole's getting a bit spicy.
Go on, tell us more.
Well, before the game, well, I don't think it'll be 30 years until we win the league again. All Manchester right. United. Oh,
spicy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I had the best dig of the day.
Go
it's
on.
Not, it's not a surprise. Best dig of the day.
Roy Keane?
Jose Mourinho.
Roy Keane, Jose Mourinho, and Graeme Souness in the studio.
I love that.
It's a lovely, miserable trio.
It was like a fucking morgue in there.
No, but that is Sky setting up an ambush like for Man United to fail, which to their credit, they did not.
No, it didn't. It's a bit like you hear the stories of, you know, the famous horror movie, The Exorcist, and William Friedkin's horror masterpiece, and the talk that like he would sort of chill the set down.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Like minus 15.
Or it's like Psycho.
So you can see the breath. That kind of felt a bit like that in the studio at Sky Sports yesterday.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
The Mourinho, for those who didn't pick up on what Mourinho said, and it's not, you know, it's par for the course of Mourinho, and some people might find it a bit tedious now because this is kind of how he operates. But it was interesting, and he said, I wish I could, or were to the effect of, I wish I could manage at a club this big and just talk about the future all the time and not have to concentrate on the present and win results. And it really did throw lay bare Mourinho's attitude as a manager. He was all about the here and now, wasn't he? All about trying to get those trophies and not worrying too much about the future. But within those quite controversial comments, there's a grain of truth, right? Which is, Solskjaer can't hide behind that forever. He can't hide behind the fact that they're not doing very well in the present because they're Manchester United.
Yeah. Which is also interesting because we've come away from the point where everyone was talking about the past. You know, that sort of feel-good factor of Solskjaer being back and it seeming a little bit like the 90s, and that sort of hung over for a bit. And now we've kind of come away from that. And that's right, the narrative has shifted to the future and to the younger players coming through. But there's old Jose ready to snipe it down.
Indeed. I mean, what was it the biggest dig of the day? I mean, I refer to Roy Keane when he said, I'm disgusted with the players. You're going to war. They're hugging and kissing. Don't even look at the opposition. You're going into battle.
Him and Souness just chuckling. Like, angry chuckling is a strange thing, but they were both doing it.
Keane did an amazing thing as well. He made like what I thought was quite a fatuous point where he said, may not just go and get Harry Kane.
Just go and get Harry Kane.
Yeah. But I think it was, we can deconstruct that all you want. But
It's not like that now, is it? Yeah, they could have done that in the past.
I don't suggest we do deconstruct it.
It won't take very long.
But the best thing that Keane said after that was, what you were looking at? Because they were looking at him. And it's like, they're looking at you because you're speaking.
The window's shut, mate.
It's about how conversations work.
You're on the telly,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he say that to Soon?
He said to everyone, what you were looking at?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like it how, because David Jones, the presenter, he's quite chirpy.
Mm. It's
a tough job for him.
God, it is.
With those three. Because if you...
the softest one's Mourinho and he's now helping you out.
It's a miserable panel.
If you try and sort of inject a little bit of light and you have a little chuck and go, life's not that bad, is it, chaps?
And there's no time for joking.
Exactly. You have just three pairs of eyes just staring back at you. Go, oh, quick ad break.
Yeah.
So soon after the last one, the director said. Yeah.
I'd love to hear that the off air. I mean, it doesn't really matter with Sky, I guess. It does sometimes get broadcast. But the off air conversation between Mourinho and Roy Keane might be quite interesting. I imagine they're very much both on the same page about how Manchester United have gone down the path.
I think
Mourinho is kind of to blame for some of it.
Yeah, but they would if they were player and manager at the same time. If
they would
careers,
definitely get on, I think
they would get on for a distinct period of time.
Yeah, and then it's Peters and Shoes getting kicked.
Exactly, but
he would be the first crack to appear in the third season.
Yeah, right. Now I don't know whether Roy Keane knew Jose Mourinho was becoming a Sky pundit or whatever, but he did say not that long ago that these are the players who threw Mourinho under the bus.
Right.
So actually, it was almost like a coming out of a bit of support with Mourinho.
Right.
Well, Mourinho said that his biggest achievement in management was getting that team to finish second. Obviously, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but you know, more and more that it looks like it has perhaps been underrated hugely.
Yeah.
You look at the finishes they've had aside from that since Ferguson. Mm.
Well, let's talk about the game itself. And Solskjaer, when he first took over at Manchester United, you know, Solskjaer is not a great manager, let's be honest. Now, whether he becomes one after experience, he'd only worked, you know, in the Norwegian league before Manchester United. And tactically, again, he's essentially still borrowing from Ferguson. Not a bad person to borrow from, of course. But when he first went in there, you know what it's like, a new job. You think, right, well, let's do the basics right. Let's take it easy. Mm. And what he has, they've got pace. They've got pace with Rashford and Martial and one or two others. I know Martial didn't start, and they now have Daniel James. But when he took over, these were the players that they had. Let's defend in numbers and let's hit teams on the break. And it worked. I mean, they won a lot of games when he first took over and had some great results. And then I think maybe he got into the job, he gets the permanent contract, and then there might be a thinking of, right, now we're in, we're back, or we're getting back. We are Manchester United, we can express ourselves, blah, blah, blah. And that's clearly not happening. Whereas this game, he went back to what he did when he first became the manager, for my money. Maybe not with the formation, but defending numbers, crowd them out in the middle a little bit at times and hunt them down, which they did well, and hit them on the break. And James and Rashford were excellent.
James had a lovely time.
Playing very wide at times. I mean, look at the goal. Yeah. Look at the goal. Yeah. James is playing like a right winger.
I love the way that Daniel James increases his speed when he picks up the ball.
I know.
A lot of players do the opposite of that.
Yeah, right. But, and understandably.
Ryan Giggs used to do that.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the tactic you alluded to there, where they almost thought that clearly a lot of Liverpool's threat would come from wide areas. So they had Rashford and James out wide, and then Young wide left and Wan-Bissaka wide right, and sort of doubled up on them. Mm.
Wan-Bissaka was excellent again.
Yeah, that worked pretty handsomely until the last sort of 10 or 15 minutes, didn't it?
Yeah.
But one thing I can't get out of my mind, and it's not an original point, and it's not something that's not been said before, so bear with me, but I do think it bears repeating, is that over the last 3 years or so, I think United have spent £400 million.
Mm.
And the team they put out yesterday, it is...
I know what you mean.
It's remarkable. Yeah. It's absolutely remarkable. It's a combination of players who probably aren't good enough for the team, for the club, and the size of the club it is, players who might go on to be a lot better, and that's pretty much it.
Mm.
You know, I mean, De Gea aside, who's been in fairly indifferent form for a while now anyway, and Maguire, who's just obviously come in.
And was a lot of, I mean, too much money.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. How can you spend that amount of money and in one of the biggest, traditionally one of the biggest games of the season, line up with the team that includes Rojo, Lindelof, who okay has been improved, but really still, Ashley, not improving Ashley Young, Fred, McTominay, Pereira, and then two promising sort of forwards. I personally think Marcus Rashford is like massively overrated, but he is a good player.
Yeah.
I don't think he's, and I think Gary Neville alluded to it in the build up to the game. He said there was talk about Lukaku and how Solskjaer decided that actually we don't want him, we don't need him. But he's a top. He's a top goal scorer.
Putting them in for Inter. I mean, he didn't have the best of times at Manchester United.
Sure, what it made me think of, and I'd be interested to get your guys' thoughts on this. It's the easiest thing in the world if you're managing one of the biggest clubs in the world to say, I don't have to manage that player. I don't like him. He's a pain in the arse. He's inconsistent. Whatever it is, whatever your beef is with him, we're going to move him on. You can do that. But is that really what a manager should be doing? Should a manager should be exploring every option, going, do you know what? We haven't really got an awful lot else. So my job as a manager is to manage this player.
Yeah.
I know it's easier said than done, but when they look so light up top, it brings it into quite stark focus, really.
And
very, very final point, very quickly. Liverpool's record at Old Trafford is...
It's really poor.
Last few years is terrible. And I wonder if Liverpool fans are kind of a little bit frustrated at how good their team has been over the last couple of years, yet how poor they are against United. It looks to me like it's a psychological thing.
Yeah, I feel that actually Liverpool might have a little bit of what Arsenal have, which is that they are gearing up to play at the old Trafford, if that makes sense, rather than the Old Trafford that, you know, where it's party time for sort of teams going there and thinking this isn't the team it once was. I think, you know, it's been such a battleground in the past for the bigger teams where those matches have meant something in terms of how the table could finish, that they still sort of play within themselves a little bit. Because I think Liverpool, they look very slick in terms of their passing and the way they move the ball throughout the game, really. But they looked a bit tame with it as well. They looked a little bit apologetic almost in the final third. Like Roberto Firmino had probably the only meaningful shot of the first half for Liverpool, and it was really, really tame.
They sort of scattered around, didn't they? Because they packed the box at Manchester United, so they're just trying to probe, but there's no space.
Yeah. But I would say, look, I think you've got to be fair on Man United and remember they've got some injuries as well. I think Luke Shaw would be starting over Ashley Young where he fit.
I don't know.
Pogba is obviously a big miss as well. We saw him with a walking stick before the game, and people say about Pogba, oh, well, you know, does he do enough, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he should do more. But I don't know if that on his day, he can make a huge difference for United, and they are going
to
miss that.
Yeah, but I think a game like that, where everyone is all hands to the pump, they need to be doing the doggies and all that.
Maybe so, but overall, I think, you know, that team is better with him in it than without him in it.
But I think that conversation you guys are sort of starting to have there is,
I think it feeds into your point, Luke, about the money spent and all that,
and the squad depth.
But I think it's to do with what type of team they are. I mean, if this, I don't think they know what kind of team they are, because Man United have that situation, and we talk a bit about it on the continent with Kovac at Bayern Munich. Kovac is a guy who made his name at Eintracht Frankfurt by sitting deep, playing on the break, and counter-attacking teams. Of course, the problem is at Bayern Munich you can't do that.
Well, and this is
Man United can't do
and
that.
And this is the problem with Solskjaer. When he's got the temporary contract, it's a free hit.
Yes,
and he can play the way he wants to play. And the players are probably happy to have him and not Mourinho, which is why the temporary situation worked. As soon as it became permanent, as we've all said and many people have commented on, then it's kind of like, all right, Ollie, how are you going to express yourself? How are you going to kick on?
Would you say then, on that then, chuck a question back at you, Marcus, since he's taken the job permanently, do you think we know any more about the type of football that Man United want to play and that Solskjaer likes to play as a manager than we did at the start?
I don't think we do. And I think if I was a Manchester United fan, I would want, whenever it happens, he's been linked to the job a lot, Massimiliano Allegri to come along. You want a manager like that who's pragmatic, who can walk into any situation and go, right, these are the players I have. Okay, let's maximise what we've got, work out the best way of playing, and then do it. Because if you have somebody who likes a certain style and you don't have the players, it can be tricky. Ancelotti's a bit pragmatic as well, actually.
I sort of always find that the way that Manchester United play at home, it's kind of a situation where people come and they expect the Manchester United of the late 90s. Yeah.
Well, I think Solskjaer does as well.
They set up to defend all the time. Like, teams come and they set up to defend, so Manchester United can't really hit them on the break.
Exactly.
Because they sit so deep. Yes. But you don't really need to defend that team for Manchester United.
No, well, that's
anyway,
it, Pete. You're right, because they can be got at.
Yeah.
And that is their problem. So if Solskjaer likes to play that counter-attacking football, that's what I said at the start of this, you can do that against Liverpool, because Liverpool are the league leaders, they're the European champions.
Yeah.
And if they come to Old Trafford, the fans, and the place was pumping by,
accounts. Yeah, it sounded nice. Yeah, it sounded good.
It sounded, you know, a bit more raucous. They can see Liverpool are better than us. But how are we going to win?
On this show on Friday, we said this game against Liverpool isn't the game that's going to tell you what you need to know about whether this United team can do anything this season and whether they can push up and not be 12th and be 5th or 6th. The games that are going to tell them that are away to Norwich and away to Bournemouth in the next two Premier League games.
Exactly.
The next four games United have got are all away from home. Mm. Partizan in the Europa League, then they go away to Norwich, then they're away to Chelsea in the League Cup, then they're away to Bournemouth. It's not unrealistic to say they might not win any of those games.
Yeah.
If they don't, they'd have won two games in all competitions since the opening day of the season, and we will be at the start of November. Mm. So that will tell you what you need to do. And the reason I'm saying that is because I think Norwich and Bournemouth will look at Man United and go, if Newcastle can beat them, albeit at home, we can beat them as well. Norwich have already got a scalp this season, at home. Mm-hmm. They can get another one. It's not getting easier for United over the next month or so just because they picked up a point against Liverpool.
But, but you're right, dude, when you say that you find nothing out about these teams when they're playing people like Manchester United and Liverpool and stuff like that. The teams that sit in the middle of the table, you find their mettle when they're playing the Burnleys and the Evertons and the West Hams and stuff like that. The teams that are around them. Everyone can raise their game for a TV match. Everyone can raise their game when they're playing at Old Trafford. It's
spoken like a true Newcastle fan.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like a true Geordie.
I'd like to mention Adam Lallana.
Yeah, that was a blast from the past, wasn't it?
Who thought that would happen?
Yeah, that was an amazing. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
I can't actually finish my sentence.
I presume you're still injured.
I was very pleased for him.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, ex-Southampton man. You know, you Southampton boys, you put a band together in these times.
It really did sort of come out of nowhere as well, didn't it? That goal. That was looking like Man United were going to hang on and maybe even get a second.
Yeah, there's a little school of thought that Aaron Wan-Bissaka is. Well, there's a big school of thought that he's a good player and so on. There's a little school of thought that his positioning isn't great and his pace. Touch like Kyle Walker at times, you know, gets him out of that. And he's a young player, so this is not a criticism. We can all improve. going forward.
He was a...
But his positioning was there. I understand people say he's tired and so on, and you know, it's not the first time that a wing-back or a full-back has tried to stop a cross and was a little bit late, so I don't want to be too harsh on him. But that is something that has been said about him. But yeah, you're right. That it was one of those awkward crosses where a defender, an own goal or someone comes in at the back post, it was perfectly put in there.
Yeah.
And Lallana couldn't believe his luck, quite frankly.
It took it well, though.
It's not the finished article. The thing with Wan-Bissaka, he's not a finished article.
No, exactly.
And he's kind of being considered, perhaps, or expected to be because of the situation that he finds himself in.
Yeah.
And because Liverpool have got quite a few decent young players who Klopp has improved massively.
Well, right,
there are loads of fullbacks in the last 10 years that have been suspect in
flattered
exactly
to
that
deceive
area.
A little bit.
I think Alexander Arnold is a bit like that. I think Kieran Gibbs was always massively I would say Carl Walker, as you already mentioned, was a bit like that. I think it just comes with the territory because of the role they're expected to perform.
Especially the evolution of that role where you are playing. Danny Alves has basically made it really hard for everyone by setting that
bar
so high.
You physically winced when I just said the word Kieran Gibbs.
Yeah, I did, yeah. just remembering a couple of games against Man United, actually, where he got rinsed.
I mean, the most complete fullback in the last sort of 10 or 15 years, whatever it would be, England producer was Ashley Cole, of course. Who not only had the forward capacity, but defending was absolutely magnificent, but it's the slight more defensive side. But yeah, this has been talked about.
Before we move on, can I just say, I think the Allegri links are actually really fanciful because looking at what's happened at Old Trafford in the last, you know, basically since Ferguson left, it's very clear that next is either Eric Cantona or David Beckham.
Yeah. I hope it is one of those two.
Can we just touch quickly on Sadio Mane's handball and
the VAR
slightly
business?
Sheepish celebration, which I enjoyed immensely. I just think that footballers will start policing themselves because they don't want to look foolish. He knows he's handled that.
He did know that, definitely.
He put it away and he did what I would describe as a half-assed celebration, knowing full well that goal was going to get chalked off. So we might get to the point where players know what they've done. They know it's going to get chalked off because you can't hide from VAR.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to tell from the way that they celebrate whether they deserved it or they didn't.
And another little dig as well, Solskjaer saying at the end of the game, I think, you know, one of the men of the match was the referee.
Right.
It's like, come on, Ole.
I feel like, you know, we were talking about it being a Hawkeye style thing where you get three challenges before VAR came in. Maybe you should get three chances to cheat.
Well, I think we're going to get a chance to talk about VAR probably later in the show.
I'd imagine so. Well, let's move on to Everton West Ham. Big win, much better performance from Everton.
Much better.
Bernard, he sort of rode his luck, but it was a lovely goal at the same time.
It was lovely feet, wasn't it?
It was lovely feet. And to nip in there with the finish.
Really disappointed by West Ham, to be honest. They've had such a good run lately, and Theo was very, very good. The ball that he hit against the bar...
That was a shame.
Well, it seemed to come off the bar quicker than it went at the bar. I couldn't figure it out.
It was all about the angle, mate.
Yeah. No, it was. I'll tell you what that looked like. That looked like Marco Silva has had Everton on the training ground, just going, stop it.
Yeah.
Be better. Let's just get all the basics right. Let's have a bit more energy, have a bit more purpose. And that looked like a team that were really fired up and really well motivated. And credit to him.
And Andre Gomes coming back into the side.
Yeah, that makes a big difference as well. Very, very good player.
I wonder how much of it, I don't want to take anything away from Everton, but I wonder how much of it is to do with this little wobble West Ham are having. I mean, they've not really recovered since they were battered by Oxford United. They were. I mean, they were beat 4-0 by them.
It's just a funny sentence, isn't it?
Did they lose? I mean, they had...
West Ham are doing okay, though.
They were doing all right.
They lost home to Palace last time out, didn't they? Yeah, they are doing okay, but what I'm saying is that's four games now without a win, and it all stems from that League Cup defeat 4-0 to Oxford United. You kind of wonder whether there's a bit of a problem there.
I've not looked at the table. They're probably still third.
Yeah, is there a problem in West Ham? West Ham, not a bad side under Pellegrini, of course, but I mean, them losing four in a row, I mean, the cup game is a bit rubbish, but
But I think given the investment that's been made,
losing at home to Palace, and we know how good Palace are.
They're looking a lot better than they were last season.
Losing away to Everton, who, you know, squad-wise, you could argue maybe a touch better than them. It's not that surprising.
I'd be disappointed with the opening goal if I was West Ham. Terrible bit of work from them.
Yeah, but it was nice feet, though.
It was nice feet.
It's nice to see Alex Iwobi doing well through the middle, I have to say, because that's always been his position.
Shame he never scored that chance. But he looks very lively. In fact, that sort of three, quite attacking formation, actually. Walcott, Iwobi and Bernard behind Richarlison. It looked good.
Richarlison had a selfish moment, didn't he? It's a shame, though. That needs to be coached out of him, I think.
What about Gylfi?
Oh, it was nice. Great finish.
My favourite goal of the weekend.
It was a dictionary definition of Gylfi Sigurdsson.
It was absolutely gorgeous. The way
I can still do it.
Sold the defending player. And that finish. It's odd because most people hitting the ball...
He's Icelandic.
Very good. Yeah. most people hitting the ball from about 20, 25 yards out into the top corner, you'd describe as a hit, whereas Sigurdsson, I would say it's a finish.
He strokes
it. Do you know what I mean?
He strokes it.
I mean, absolutely glorious. The pace and the precision.
If you take into the account the fact that he obviously hits a lovely dead ball, that is a textbook Sigurdsson goal.
It's glorious.
Aside from that. I don't know if I agree with you guys about Iwobi. I feel a bit like he flattered to deceive in that game from what I saw. And he's better off the left, isn't he? He's a better wide forward than he is playing as a number 10.
I would disagree, actually. I think that's out wide, he often kind of runs out of ideas, and that's why quite often at Arsenal, when he's played out wide, he would get into the box and then he would not make a decision, and it was always like either shoot or pass, but don't do neither and lose the ball, which he did a lot. But I think he's a lot more focused through the middle. But obviously,
you'd be happy with a team like Everton who've got ambitions. Not ever a poor start, but they had ambitions at the start of the season to finish certainly in the top six. You'd be happy to do that with Iwobi and Nahol.
As an option.
It's difficult to say without having seen him play too much there, but I certainly think as an option, as one of the players that plays in there.
The platform, of course, in the midfield came from Tom Davis, who should have scored. Yeah. It was a great save.
It's interesting with Tom Davis, isn't it? Because he just sort of disappeared.
Yeah,
well, he broke through when he was quite young, but he still looked like he was a sort of like 27-year-old singer of an indie band.
Yeah.
And he looked fantastic, and he's just sort of been in and out the side for a long time.
Well, I think they've got so many sort of combinations and options in there. So Davis and Gomez played to give that attacking forward line the sort of the platform they needed, and it really worked. But they've had a few injuries, and I think it was almost not makeshift, because Gomez is a starter and he's quite possibly the best player they have, you could say, in terms of performances, or certainly one of them. He's loved at Goodison Park, as I understand it. So Silva's got a lot of combinations in there. As you say, playing Iwobi is in that sort of.
I do think at some point Silva's going to have to decide what his team is. That's the problem.
But you don't have to have the same team every week. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but the combinations they've used in midfield, they've made so many.
But even up
so
front,
many.
Though, Moisey Ken is on the bench.
They're all much of a matches, aren't they? I mean, yeah. I don't think to defend Silva for a second. I know they played Richarlison up front, and he has done that a fair amount before. Mm. None of those players, whether it's Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin, or Ken, are demanding to be picked up front, aren't they? Mm. And that's probably the problem he's got.
True. All right, let's move on to Aston Villa versus Brighton. The 10 men of Brighton nearly held on for a point. Nearly had a Matt Target, of course, scored a nice one deep into injury time. It's all about Jack Grealish.
Very Grealish performance from him.
When he plays like that, which is more and more, it would appear, which is great. He's so entertaining.
He is.
He's one of the most entertaining players in the league.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel with Jack Grealish, he's 24 years old now, and I'm very, very happy that he had such a good game in front of Gareth Southgate. I'd like to see him in the England setup, but I fear for him, as we've been saying over the last couple of weeks, there are. In any generation of players, if you have a good crop of players, there are some players that are just going to miss out.
Yes.
And I wonder if Grealish is sort of... he's played best when he has a sort of free role, you know, and I wonder if that can be accommodated at England. But, like, I mean, he's created 25 chances in 9 games this season, and I really hope he isn't one of those players that just sort of doesn't fit into the international setup. I'd like to see what he can do for England.
Exactly. I get the feeling that he would take his opportunity with both hands.
I think you're right, Pete. I think Grealish maybe a year ago, admittedly that was in the Championship, so it would be unlikely if he was called.
This is no criticism of him, by the way.
No, of course. Why are you doing that sign?
That's at you.
Okay, that's a fair comment. But I think with Grealish, actually, I think the way England's set up with the two midfielders either side of a pivot and sort of going up and down, I actually think he could do that. And that performance personified that. The way that he's willing to get stuck in, the way he won the ball back with that sliding tackle, which set up, was it the goal that was eventually disallowed?
Mm.
The way he burst into the box to score his goal. He's clearly got skill. He can be quite silky on the ball. He's a great dribbler of the ball, but I think he is actually putting, he's got the industry now to kind of back it up.
Yeah.
And giving him the captain's armband, I think Dean Smith thought, right, this will either go one of two ways.
Well, he's sort of saying, look, take the chance that you didn't take last time you were in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He's had a little time out of the Premier League, and he's sort of seen other players that he would probably regard as being not as good as him take their opportunities and become multi-million
he's been counted for. He's from that part of the world in Birmingham. They love him there.
He's got a Peaky Blinder haircut.
He's got the Peaky Blinder haircut. Mm. And given the armband, was it back in March or whenever he came back from injury? And he's taken it with both hands. He's now a big game player. And he's had a lot of crap to put up with as well. You remember that? Was it Birmingham City when the fan hit him and all that?
He's had loads of
But he seems like he's got got quite broad shoulders and he's matured. And
he's also got pissed quite a lot as well.
But I'm hoping that's been the past.
That comes to the haircut, mate. I'm doing it every weekend.
But that's the point, Luke, is that he seems to be sort of kicking on from all that kind of stuff. According to Sky Sports, he's the most fouled player in the league. That was before Liverpool, Man United, so I don't know whether there was a player in there.
But he carries the ball really well, doesn't he? Which would draw a lot of fouls, I suppose. And again, that is something that could potentially be really, really useful for England.
Take the heat off certain Crystal Palace players.
Exactly.
Against Brighton, he played off the left, cutting onto his right foot, right? So he plays an attacking midfield role, but off the left of a front three for Villa, without getting too tactical about it. The problem is, if you're talking about him in the England setup, and I'm not against him being in the squad or anything, but clearly he's a talented player, and you can see him giving England an option, perhaps if they need to unlock a door late on in a game, I can understand that. But he's not pushing his way into that first 11. Mm. And so I guess maybe Gareth Southgate thinks, well, I don't really need to pick him just yet. No. He's still got plenty of time ahead of him. And he's one of the things that wasn't mentioned, actually, is just that he was also done really well to pick himself up from... I'm fairly certain he thought he was on his way, didn't he? I think, wasn't there talk that Spurs were going to go and sign him? And
that was a few seasons ago, wasn't it?
It was a couple of years ago, but it went down the line a long way. And he had to pick himself up and re-equip himself again, and he's done that. I think he's an exciting player to watch. I like him. He's a good player. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether he's particularly going to add too much to England at this point, but I mean, he's still got time on his side, hasn't he?
But he's making himself in the beginning to teeter on the edge of the conversation. And bearing in mind some of the players in those positions, he's done very well.
He's essentially occupying the place that Sterling plays for England at the moment, though, right?
So. No. I see that. He for me would be in one of the midfield three, not in the front.
Yeah, but he's literally not playing that for Villa at the moment.
Well, but at times though, are you sure?
Yeah, he's playing off the left in a front three.
Sure,
for Villa. Yeah,
at times though, he has played more.
He obviously interprets the role completely differently to Sterling because he's a different type of player.
But I'm saying, based on some of the performances, I think he could play that role. You know, Dele Alli plays in a different position for Spurs, but for England, and Jesse Lingard for England at the World Cup, they did.
Neither of them play for England now.
No, but in the World Cup, they did, and they were a part of a side that went to the semi final, and they played that role quite well. So I think he could interpret it slightly differently. But there we are. Let's not talk about England because it's not the international break.
No,
and that's roll on the next one.
Yes, indeed.
Can't be that long now.
Aaron Moy, silly boy.
So now something a little different. Co-op came to us talking about their new time-saving meals that are easy to cook and are easy on the environment. And they thought that we might want to come up with some ideas on how football clubs could be more responsible when it comes to sustainability. Co-op, they're going to be providing the actual ethical choices with their new style food packaging. We're going to be providing the silly. So lads, how would you make football more sustainable, more environmentally friendly?
Straight away. Bang.
Right.
In rugby, you see, and some other sports as well, you see teams, players who aren't starting the game or are on the bench, who are trying to warm up. They don't do what football players do and run up and down the touchline and wait for the camera to be on them before they try.
They're on
static bikes, like push bikes.
Yeah.
And they use those to warm up. Now, if you got a whole squad, minus the 11 they're actually playing, to use those bikes to warm up, you could harness that energy and then use that to power, I don't know, something. I don't know what you'd power.
I'm not going to tell you how to use your sustainable energy, your renewables.
Yeah, leave it to the experts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I would do.
Surely they should just hook up everyone in the gym, because obviously they're lifting things, they're pulling things, they're dragging things.
The bikes are there anyway.
Reminds me, actually, and we laughed at the time, the Monster Raving Loony Party.
Yeah.
They said that joggers should be put on machines, as they can still get to do their runnings.
Yeah.
But those machines would power some, you know, maybe home heating lights, or something like that. Yeah. And so this is what you're tapping into.
Hugely. Mm.
Floodlights are a good point as well, Luke, because obviously I think night games in particular must use up a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see night games played in a slightly different way with no floodlights and the teams painted in luminescent paint with the kits faithfully rendered on their nude bodies, but also the ball and the pitch markings and the goals would have to be luminous as well. But I think that would make for an interesting spectacle.
But the way that luminous paint works is that it has to be kind of, I think, charged up with the sun anyway, so they'd all have sitting sun lamps before they run out, which kind of offsets your energy anyway. Well, it's kind of difficult.
I don't mind it.
Some parts of the world it would work.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite a Tron-esque sort of...
It is.
Yeah, it would look like that, yeah.
But the referee should have no paint at all. So he just ghosts around.
Oh, yeah.
Only his whistle should be luminous. So it's like a floating whistle everywhere.
But what about referees who are really smiley and happy to be there? You'd be able to see their teeth.
Well, they'd still
get to do games in the daytime.
Okay.
Oh, God, luminous teeth as well, just for the fun of it. That'd be good.
You could sort of strip down to have no clothes on at all, so you're completely invisible. You could grab the ball. You could have someone take a shot. You could grab the ball, bend it around the wall, into the back of the net. A header would, almost luminous.
A header would look like the player had teethed it in.
It'd be great. Or what you could do even, you could get one of those, like, you know, those Roy Lichtenstein, like, makeup things people do now. So people paint themselves to look like they're a pop art picture.
Yeah.
Just do that. Just realistic, well, unrealistic renderings of the players' actual faces in luminous paint. This has got legs.
It has got, well, it's got luminous paint. That's what it's got. I would probably take, because obviously the big problem with single-use plastic is it's everywhere at a football ground and there's no way of escaping it. But also the sustainability of getting all of those continental strength lagers into the stadium as well.
Yes.
Bring your own homebrew. Homebrew. Make your own hooch for the concourse.
At the top level in this country, you can't actually drink alcohol in view of the pitch anyway.
So it's a mistake.
So you're bringing your own homebrew in to stand in the concourse and drink it.
Probably dragging your bathtub on wheels to the car park, trying to sell it.
Make some prison cider where you just get a lot of fruits, put it in a carrier bag and put it in a toilet cistern.
How are you saving the environment? Prison cider.
Yeah. Exactly.
Delighted to know that you know how to make that at all.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
For the World Cup or big international tournaments, they should always be played in, is it Northern Norway, where it never gets dark?
Yes. That's a good idea.
Get them up there.
Lovely.
It'd be very cold with any clothes on.
Also, everyone would have to travel there. That's terrible to the environment. They have to go there by dog sled and they play there in the summer.
We should scrap the World Cup have a Scandinavian championship.
Yeah.
And that replaces the World Cup.
I'd be up for that. It's lovely up there. Fantastic. So there's your three or four silly ideas from Football Ramble Daily. But when it comes to stuff that we do ourselves as consumers, it just means making more ethical choices. Every time you go to the fridge, every time you go to the shop to get some food in to eat while you're watching the football or while you're watching like Champions League or internationals on telly in the next few weeks. Co-op's irresistible paella, fish pie and macaroni cheese, for example, have all said goodbye to the plastic. All excellent choices. 100% compostable carrier bags as well, available in over 1,000 stores nationwide. That means that you've got options getting it home as well. It's just about making small changes to your routine, responsible choices every single day. So that little section has been brought to you by Co-op. It's what we do.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Football Ramble Daily, everybody. Luke, what are you trying to say, mate?
Oh, Betway Ford score update. Shall I do that first?
Go on. All right, then.
I think it rolls over because no one had it. I think three or four players had it going into the Palace-Man City game. I think Danny Ings knocked a lot of people off their perch. But there were a few people that went in, but none of them had Jesus. So it rolls over again. So the jackpot gets even bigger. Go to betway.com/4 to score, to play for free for a chance to win. I think it's around £200,000 now. It's a big, big prize. Tammy Abraham was gym selection. That was a no.
Should have been, though.
Adama Traore was a no. Mm. Raheem Sterling was a no. And big Bobby Firmino was a no. But we press on. We go again.
Why didn't I go for Jimenez?
On Friday.
Seems insane.
I don't know.
But he never scored the first one. It was Danny Ings.
Yeah,
exactly.
Firmino let you down as well, Marcus.
He did.
If you want to come and see us live, we have five shows left in England.
Holy moly.
Birmingham, Newcastle, Leeds, Aston Villa, almost Aston Villa then, Norwich, sorry, and Salford. This week is what, Leeds and Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then we go Norwich, Birmingham,
they're
going to
be belters.
Come meet my family in the Newcastle leg.
Yeah. Great. Purely belters.
Ramblelive.com to get tickets. They're running out fast. Five shows to go. That's it.
Uh-huh.
So get your tickets while you can.
Oh, we're having a lovely time. Now it's time for emails with PD. Email show at footballrambledaily.com.
And now Pete is reading it out. Well done. Email from Jolly. Interesting name. It is their second name, though. Hello, Ramblers. We live in a divisive time with discourse on matters of great importance, the outcomes of which will shape generations to come. I'm, of course, writing to you about one such topic, a discussion which in recent times has divided families, friends, and even more recently, our very own Football Ramble Discord. The topic in question is the preferred match day snack. Detractors who have lost their way will state that their preferred snack is the hot dog because of its ergonomic design, making it easy to hold and eat without the need of utensils. Is this the creeping Americanization of football, though? What will be next? Churros and halftime shows. I like a churros.
Yeah.
I love churros.
I love churros, yeah.
All over not the support he wanted.
No, I like a halftime hot dog. Although I think they've stopped doing them. I think they've stopped doing them at the Emirates. You can get a 14-pound cheeseburger though. So
nice.
Wow,
yeah.
Blimey. It used to just be pies and that was it. You know,
yeah.
You used to get my memory of going to Fratton Park. It used to be pies or. Weirdly, they only sell king size chocolate bars.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah, mm. and that would be it. And you get like a beer or a coffee or. Bovril or whatever.
I think the pies, I think the problem is the pies became very kind of mechanical kind of looking things in professional packaging and stuff.
Yeah.
Like the pies used to just come in
the
foil.
Yeah.
It used to be like
the old
there,
meat pies. Yeah.
Like
right,
circular
yeah.
meat
oh, they were
pies.
Beautiful.
And just, they were absolutely lovely. But now they just become like off
circular
the shelf kind
pies.
Of like circular meat
I
pies.
Yeah, I do.
Like they've been scooped off a cow.
Yeah, so I guess...
I do miss the meat pies at football. I mean, I'm sure that you have them in various places.
But I reckon that hot... I mean, it is quite difficult to eat a meat pie. And as we're trying to reduce our packaging, maybe it's not the most... greatly designed, but it just gets everywhere, and you need to just overcompensate with a lot of paper towels and stuff like that.
Hot dog is easy to eat.
Hot dog is easier, and you've got options with the mustard and things like that.
I think in Spain, the snack of choice is unshelled peanuts and marijuana,
specifically at the Nou Camp. That
and at the Bernabeu
that one time.
The Bernabeu, they love sesame seeds.
Mm.
They love it. They love sesame seeds. There's so much admin involved.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
I think that there's an element to this of kind of, oh, back in my day, it used to be this, and now the Americanization or the entertainmentization of football means
as if a sausage is un-British in some way.
But give people a choice.
Give me a fucking corn dog.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now.
Do you remember when FC St. Pauli had a sausage train in their VIP section?
Yeah.
Bring that in.
You might
just a sort of pipe.
Sausage drawn.
Slurry out of it.
Sausage drawn. Just dropping sausages down my throat. Okay, clip that as well.
And Jim just mentioned something about a sausage pipe, okay?
Yeah.
So
shall we
call a
slurry pipe.
Call an end to that.
Oh, are you administering the email section?
I never said that.
I say you get in your sausage drawn and get out of town, all right?
Well, yeah.
Justin
all right,
Griffith has got in touch. Hello, Justin. If you were during a fantasy football league where you got points based on how much your player looked like a laid-off mill worker who drinks during the day at the bar where he starts fights with strangers, would anyone cost more than Harry Maguire? Fantastic stuff.
I think Milner would be up there.
Yeah.
That's very. Who was that from?
I've got to skip back. I've moved on because I'm trying to, you know, clip onto the next email. Because you got upset, Justin.
Why should Pete know who the name of the email is?
Well, because I moved to the next email because Marcus was very interested in moving on.
Peter, move on to the next email now.
I dictate the pace here.
Go on, move
I'm Pirlo.
On. That's it.
Chris.
Late stage Pirlo.
Yeah, different like MLS stage.
Very, very much the PLO swilling a big glass of wine around a vineyard.
Oh, we're playing football, are we?
Yeah.
Chris, a suffering Derby fan. Hello, chaps. Loved the live show in Sheffield on Thursday. It was a lot of fun, that one. One of the topics of chat that came up with was Graham Souness' friendship with Dale Winton.
Yes.
And this jogged my memory about an unlikely football friendship that I read about a few years ago. Thierry Henry is good friends with Charlene Spiteri of Texas fame.
Yes.
He was in a video, wasn't he?
Yeah,
a recent
really
Texas
strange.
Video.
Unexpected friendships in football is a great,
nice. A famous one is Noel Gallagher and
Messi?
Del Piero, isn't it?
Although,
and they don't share a language, but Del Piero loves Oasis.
That's right.
And they're just somehow mates.
He invited him to the World Cup semi-final.
That's right. Mm.
Nice. Yeah.
Went into that.
Yeah.
Where's our famous friends? God damn it.
Clive Tilsley. Yeah. Thanks very much.
We met him at a pub once, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Who was that from Sheffield? Was that someone we were having a little drink with after?
Oh, I don't know.
Tell you what, there was a chap.
What's the name of the emailer?
Chris.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, lovely chap called Mark, Sheffield Wednesday fan. He's been listening to us for 10 years.
Good man.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I said he was a suffering Derby fan, so maybe listen to the emails I'm doing on the email section.
Oh, he's got you there.
Oh, yeah. We're getting an outro jingle.
You email short football ramble daily.
It's like a mic drop, that.
Sorry, everybody.
Excellent section. Yeah. Well administered from the young Donaldson.
from the young Donaldson.
The Jack Grealish of emails.
Indeed. Wayne Rooney will be playing for Derby soon.
Yes.
They crashed out.
They lost 4-1, didn't they? 5-1 in the old...
Had a bit of a meltdown, didn't they?
In their tricky time.
He played very well for that team, though, didn't he? Brought a lot to the league.
For a bit. Yeah, as often they do. Usually at the start, people are a bit like, oh, I don't know whether I can be bothered with this. And then it's like, no. Come on, respect your professional. Rooney was, I think, more the other way around.
Yeah, like in everyone else in this room, I didn't watch MLS. So,
that's
just different time zones. Yeah.
When we're in America,
we'll do it.
We'll be able to
pretend that we did.
Get involved. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Leicester City beat Burnley 2-1. A welcome win for Leicester, of course, as they remembered their late owner 1 year on from the tragic helicopter crash. But it was a good win. Obviously, VAR played its part. Chris Wood scored the goal to begin with. I tell you what, Kasper Schmeichel did that brilliant thing where the goalkeeper goes absolutely mad at everyone when the goal goes in. And I sort of watched it back, and I think Schmeichel's probably a little bit disappointed that he didn't do better with it.
Yeah. Because that's normally how it works. Yeah.
Yeah. And he thinks, no, everyone else's fault but mine.
Yeah.
And goes mad.
AKA Paul Ince at Wolves the entire time he was there. Yeah. I don't know why I always mention that. I think it might have been because they were in the same division as Portsmouth for a while around that time. But he was the king of just shouting at everyone all games.
Yeah. Oh, he loved it. Johnny Evans, of course, was clipped by Big Chris, and he was adamant that he'd been tripped. Sean Dyche was angry. He said he'd seen it back 37 times and thought VAR made the wrong decision.
Interesting a lot of time. Number, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of time.
On the match of the day analysis, they spoke about how he does clip him, whether it be intentional or not. But again, it's very hard to see. But I suppose that is what this is for, isn't it? It's for making those calls that are very difficult to see in real time.
Yeah, the debate is whether he meant it. I don't think he did mean it. But should that sway the decision either way? We see sometimes penalties are given if a defender accidentally trips a forward when he clearly doesn't mean to, but he's impinged him. And would Evans have got the ball? That is
again,
slightly...
Does that matter? That's
yeah, I don't think it does.
The opportunity for him to do that has been taken away, hasn't
it? I mean, he certainly had a better chance of getting the ball if he was running and not tripped up in any sort of way. So I understand the frustrations of both people, of both sides.
I mean,
but again, it's...
any of us around this table would be absolutely fuming if that happened to our team.
Yeah.
I just feel like I didn't see much of the day. So forgive me if I'm repeating what's already been said or whatever, but I don't feel like it's been implemented properly. I feel like the best way of implementing it is for the referee to be told, I'm happy for it to be at a fairly high threshold in principle, that he's made a mistake and needs to go and look at something again because the referee's refereeing the game. Now, we see that at international tournaments, and I believe we see it in other leagues around Europe. What's happening at the moment is it's being overruled by another official who's got no feel of how the game is. We know because we've all watched thousands of football games, and we know because we've interviewed referees on this very network where they've said, I referee a game this way, sometimes I referee a game that way. The only person who can get in touch with that and really tap into it is the referee himself. So in the case, the best example would perhaps be that Watford Spurs penalty decision.
With Delafay.
That was crazy.
Now, the referee needs to go to the side of the pitch and look at that again.
Well, this is what Ali Shearer was saying.
And then the referee, I feel like in that situation specifically, needs to go, okay, now I'm seeing it from this angle. Mm-hmm. I didn't have this angle before. Mm. Do I now think this is a penalty? And if you don't, I mean, in that case, you've got fucking rocks in your head. Mm. But if you don't, then it's your decision because you're the referee and you'll be judged by an assessor on your performance anyway. Yeah. What's happening at the moment, as we all know, is it's getting something in their ear from someone who's not even at the game, not even got the pace of the game, saying you should be doing this and you shouldn't be doing that. And to me, it's all wrong. I felt like watching the games I watched back on Saturday, and then by the time I got to the end of the Man United-Liverpool game, I didn't really feel like I knew where I was coming or going, to be honest. I felt like the situation has changed to such an extent that we are now watching football in a different way. And this is not me being like an old, white, boring guy saying, oh, I don't like change.
And give
I
me
get
a pie.
Do give me a pie. I get it. But I feel like they're not even helping themselves at this stage.
Do you think part of it is that everyone's paranoid about it slowing the game down
changing
the spectacle? Well, exactly. That the referees have perhaps been told or are choosing to not go over to the side of the pitch.
But Jim, where does this come from, the slowing the game down thing?
Well, I think that was one of the worries beforehand, wasn't it? Within the general.
But a game is slowed down for loads of reasons.
You see games in Serie A regularly now with 7 or 8 minutes injury time. So it is slowing up the game.
But I wonder, do you have the fourth official who's also present at the game and aware of the feel of it, just go and look at the video at the side of the pitch? Why have it there if you're not going to use it?
And also, I said it before we started today, like have the referee have some kind of wearable tech where he can actually watch it. He doesn't need to run to the side of the pitch.
I love this
idea. These clips are curated in such a way that it's only like the 5 seconds that it's important that the guy needs to look at. Quick zoom, quick look at where the feet are, the position and stuff like that. Do it that way. Or just
quick check your step count.
Quick step count.
Yeah. Candy Crush.
Check some emails.
This is better. You call it the gifferee. You wear it on your arm.
Yeah. And just have two or three referees, each referee watching a different angle, and it's a live, you don't get any replays, just live, was it a foul, was it this, was it that?
I like it.
Beep, beep, beep.
Slightly sort of boxing vibe about that.
Well, just instantly done. So
like
there's no one's getting overruled because the referees are, it's implicit that the referee, each referee in that truck is seeing a different angle and a different elevation of the action. But no replays, just referee it 4 different ways and vote.
So
that's just the way it fucking
more
goes.
Now you're referees. Now you're getting mad.
More referees.
No, we need more. Look, 22
it's already mad.
Cams.
He started off saying the game's going to be slowed down, and Marcus agreed. And you're talking about 4 referees.
It's not slowed down, though, because it's literally... It's a vote. Every referee would stop the match in the way that they would stop the match. So they go, that was a foul, that was a foul, that was a handball, that wasn't a foul. So say if one referee thinks, either on the pitch or off the pitch, thinks it's a foul and nobody else does, the game doesn't stop. So it's an instant thing. And there's no instant replays over and over again.
Employs more referees as well.
Yeah, keep them off the street. Yeah. To me, I think if you're going to adopt VAR, which we've decided that everyone's decided they are, you have to do it. So if it's been decided that it's been implemented, I don't personally particularly like it, but it's happening. I accept it. It's going to happen. Right? I think you've then got to go all in. You've then got to say, this is still the referee. Because all the literature that came out beforehand, well, not all of it, but some of it was saying stuff like, the referee will still have the final decision. The referee is the guy in charge of the game. But the referee's in charge of the game. Let him be in charge of the game. And if it means we have to have 8 or 9 minutes of injury time at the end of each game, that's just how it's going to be for now till we smooth it out and maybe get it a little bit more efficient. Maybe the wearable tech thing is an option in the future. But ultimately, I think the final decision should come down to the referee. Because as far as I know, it's not fucking Howard Webb in that fucking room. You know, it's not some of the most decorated referees ever.
We need to meet these people.
We do. Who are they?
Who are they? Well,
who are these traitors?
Leicester City are now third in Premier League. They are just 2 points behind Manchester City.
Lovely goal by Tillemans as well.
Lovely goal.
And also,
they're 8 points, Jim, behind Liverpool. Is Brendan Rodgers on the verge?
It could be
of a title win.
Yeah, imagine it.
Is he on the verge of a title win when he's 8 points off the top in October? Mm. I don't know about you guys, but that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Liverpool and Man City could both spectacularly collapse.
He's lost it.
Wait, do you think he's lost it now? Did you hear the very beginning of the show?
I think
could Palace steal in and
come
break up?
Come May,
Brendan's
first
dream season.
Crystal Palace second, Arsenal relegated.
There we go.
Yeah. Nice, I like it.
Thank you.
There we go. I don't like it.
Newcastle 17th.
Why don't people realise...
They're safe. Yeah, fine, I'll take
None
it.
Of this will happen.
Can we take it now? I'll take it now. What do you mean you need me to do?
Hand over those magic beans.
Are they on the verge?
Why don't people
realise... They can almost taste it. They can almost taste it. They're so close. I mean, Betway have got about 150-1. So you know what to do.
He used to be a
hey, hang on. What was the was it a 5,000-1 when they won the league?
Yeah, true.
Now they're 150-1. Look at the stats, people. Yeah,
you'd be a mug not to bet on that.
Absolutely slashing those odds.
He used to be a Fulham fan. Yeah. I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, no, I'm a Man United fan.
Marcus Sports anywhere Brendy is.
That's not true.
Yeah, come on. Well,
it doesn't sound like it's not true.
All right. Well, look.
Before we move on from this game, why don't people realise that if you abuse Jamie Vardy, he'll just score? Yeah, will score.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't do that.
He's a machine.
Yeah.
He's an absolute machine.
It's ridiculous because Vardy's record in the Premier League.
Because he's quite a risible character.
It does weirdly enjoyably, though.
Yeah, but it goes underplayed how good he is. I mean, that goal he scored, it was a brilliant goal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a textbook, no mucking about.
How old is Vardy now? He's, what, 32?
Something like that.
Yeah.
He seems to be getting faster the older he gets.
Just out of spite, almost.
Yeah, it's like a Di Natale-esque sort of pace at that age.
I feel like with Vardy, there's an element to him where there's not really any sort of mucking around or debate. It's just that, you know, sometimes
he should, when he retires, he should be Vardy working VAR.
But I don't ever remember people having big discussions about how... Oh, because he came into the Premier League at Leicester. He came to prominence, didn't he?
He's had a phenomenal career.
14-15. And then 15-16, that was when he got 24 Premier League goals.
Yeah.
And he's been consistent
ever
since.
And that was when he broke the record for scoring in consecutive games as well, is that right?
That was in Leicester's Premier League title season. But my point just merely is that I don't remember any... I might be wrong, but I don't remember at any point people going, oh, you know... He just needs to get one off his ass to get
ready. Yeah.
He's played almost every Premier League game, and he just consistently scores over and over again.
I know this is a strange thing, but it's
going in by Vardy.
Yeah, okay. It's a shame for him personally, obviously, that he's come along at a time when Harry Kane was the starting striker for England. And obviously Kane was top scorer in the World Cup if we go back to the last tournament. But Vardy, I would have loved to have seen him, you know, maybe a year or two before or whatever, given a proper role. Because you know how he just doesn't respect anyone?
Yes.
Imagine playing against the defences at a big tournament.
I was really hoping he would get a goal for England at the World Cup. Just to sort of really put the cherry on top of that story.
I know what you mean.
But you're absolutely right.
He got one at the Euros, though.
If England drew had a game coming up in the quarterfinal of a World Cup against, I don't know, the best Brazil team.
Yeah, Germany or something.
Vardy's wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Glorious.
He probably wouldn't score, but he wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah. Well, the way he's going, he should pick up his second Premier League winner's medal soon enough.
On the verge.
Let's go down to the Championship where West Brom beat Middlesbrough 1-0. Thomas Henry, Alex Robson-Kanu, or Hal, as we affectionately call him, with the goal off the bench. Slaven Bilic's boys, they're on top of the league.
I've enjoyed the fact that you've given his full name there. I'm a big fan of a footballer's weird full name, like Joseph Dave Gomez. Or Luke Shaw's full name is Luke Paul Horshaw.
Horshaw. Nice.
Lord Horshaw.
Yeah. I like the way also Marcus said that we affectionately call him Hal. Like,
we've spoken about him in the last 2 years. Yeah.
Mate, I took him to that Hal and he's got that goal.
Against Belgium, come on.
That was brilliant.
It's one of those
Philippe Albert's goal against Manchester United.
Always gets a bench.
And his goal against Belgium. I sort of got... If I see that online, I have to watch it.
But imagine...
It's automatic.
We think that as Englishmen. Imagine what Welsh people think of that goal.
I'll tell you what, the Manic Street Preachers have a hard time putting his full name into that song.
Oh yes,
it was that awful song.
Well, they sit top of the league now. Bilic's boys
are having a lovely old time.
It's a really interesting top of the Championship as usual. I've been impressed with QPR. They're a little wobble, but they're playing some nice stuff. They're doing well. It's anyone's pick as usual.
Are you a bit worried for Jonathan Woodgate?
Yes,
for 21st, 10 points, 12 games, lost 4 in the last 5.
Who'd have thought Jonathan Woodgate wouldn't be a very good manager?
Oh, come on.
Jim's
raised his hand. Pete and I are not raising our arms.
Right, it's 50-50.
You didn't vote.
It's his second referendum. Back to the polls.
We need technology. We need technology to work this
Woodgate.
Thing out.
Who'd have thought a man who ejected himself from a bar by accidentally glassing himself in the
face. And it was very deliberate.
Yeah, okay. Well, he's not managing Middlesbrough very deliberately, is all I'm saying. I haven't watched much of them. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but they're not doing very well.
No, but Stoke City weren't doing very well, and they've had another win. They beat Fulham, their first home win since March, back-to-back league win since January. It was all despite Fulham having 78 possesh.
Yeah, it was a textbook 2-0. I mean, obviously Stoke scored early, didn't they?
78% of the possession, should I say.
Yeah.
I think you understood that.
Yeah.
Carry on, sorry.
I got it, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm used to your anachronisms.
Yes.
But it was a textbook 2-0 as far as I saw, because Stoke obviously went one up. Mm. Fulham kept pushing because that's the way they play,
Fulham
keep all the ball.
Very much though.
No, but then Stoke hit on the break end, didn't they?
It's slightly concerning. I mean, for Fulham because they've got a brilliant front line, yet they seem a little bit blunt at times up front. Bear in mind you've got Mitrovic there, Knockhart and
I think
Cavalli,
Mitrovic did have a chance, and Kearney had a chance as well, didn't he? Went quite close.
Yeah, but I think they often rely on Kearney just or
to bang
out
one in,
or Cavaliero. So yeah.
Well, do you think they should be doing a lot better with the players they've got then?
Yeah, I think there's been games that Fulham have not created much, or they've not taken their chances, because I think teams sit deep against them because they know Fulham like to play with a lot of possession, and then they can be got at the other end a little bit. So Stoke equipped themselves very, very well.
I find the Stoke thing fascinating because, I mean, Nathan Jones' record there, as we mentioned a few weeks ago, is just absolutely appalling.
Yeah.
And he wasn't moved on, he wasn't fired. And we said at the time, and I spoke to a friend of mine who's a Stoke fan, that there must be something going on behind the scenes there as to why he's not being moved on and why he's doing such a bad job, because he was excellent in the job before that. And he's clearly quite a forward-thinking, interesting guy. And now they win these back-to-back games. And a game against Fulham, I mean, for all you've said about Fulham's frailties there, they're a good team and they're going to be there or thereabouts probably. So it's a good win.
Yeah.
If they can build that platform and Jones can finally get his ideas across, they've got some good young players at Stoke. And it could be interesting to see how they do.
Could well be. Let's go to the FA Cup. Regrettably, we have to go to the FA Cup. The fourth qualifying round match, of course, between Haringey Borough and Yeovil Town was abandoned after reports of racist abuse by fans. The Haringey goalkeeper, who I believe is from Cameroon, was reportedly spat at and racially abused, according to the Haringey manager. The Haringey side did say Yeovil Town players and managers apparently tried to calm sections of the away fans and they supported Haringey in their decisions, their decision to walk off the pitch. But so soon after the incidents in Sofia in Bulgaria.
In the week that the Premier League have had their No Room for Racism campaign. Now, I appreciate this is separate from the Premier League, but
I get the
football
point.
Has to join up on this. If you've read the details of this, it is disgusting.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking interview with the Haringey boss as well. He was in tears after the match.
Yeah, I mean,
but this is...
I think Yeovil have to be kicked out of the FA Cup here. I don't know what the protocol is, but that is what the Haringey manager said. They don't really know.
It's a bit of a landmark season, isn't it?
I would
suggest that teams do keep walking off because it's the only way that the FA will... I mean, you look at the way that the FA, they've got a pretty wretched record of dealing with stuff like that. You look at, you know, from John Terry to Millwall's 10 grand fine for at the start of this season.
Yeah.
You compare that to the Huddersfield Town kit debacle. What was that, 50 grand? Hit them where it hurts. Hit them in an administrative capacity where they have to make decisions on stuff, reschedule games and hit them financially. Because at the end of the day, that's the kind of the only language football authorities can fundamentally understand.
But the problem is at that level, I mean, it's worth pointing out at the time of recording, two men have been arrested and are in custody on suspicion of racially aggravated common assault. So it is being dealt with. The people, the antagonists are being dealt with fairly swiftly. I'm sure they'll be punished the full extent of the law if they're found guilty, as it should happen. The problem is, I'm not defending the behaviour, obviously, because it's disgraceful, and I broadly agree with the action that was taken by Haringey Town, is that you're talking about financially punishing a 120-year-old football club to the point where they might go out of business because every team at that level is in huge financial problems anyway. Then it's kind of, I'm not suggesting that I know I have the answers here. And clearly it's very easy for the Premier League in this case, as you mentioned, Jim, to do a No Room for Racism thing and a slick looking marketing campaign. They're the easy things to do, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Because they're not taking affirmative proper action. And clearly affirmative proper action needs to be taken. I just get nervous when you have two guys who do something despicable and disgraceful and illegal and, you know, have been arrested for it. You're then talking about punishing a centre focal point of the community.
I'm not talking about punishing the actual side of Yeovil probably in this case, that there needs to be something done. But keep walking off. Keep giving the FA headaches that they have to sort out.
Oh, I agree with that. I mean? But Jim's just called for Yeovil Town to be kicked out the FA Cup. That's what I'm talking about.
I think, you know, they need to take a hit on that. You know, for the sort of greater good of what happens, because
it'll happen in other weekends.
Happen.
It'll happen at other weekends, and this season needs to be there needs to be a line drawn, and it is societal. It's not going to start and end with football, but there needs to be some pretty harsh lessons learned, I think.
Well, I think we can I think we can all agree that it's, it's not just the Oval as well.
But there was a good story in
The
FA Cup.
Yes, there was. It was fantastic, actually. Billericay Town goalkeeper Alan Julian, which, by the way, is a fantastic name anyway. Well,
Billericay aren't the most popular side out there. No. But this is a great story.
They're a fascinating club to watch for different reasons, and particularly on social media. But Alan Julian scored, goalkeeper, of course, scored an injury-time equaliser against his old team to earn a replay in the cup. And Pete was fuming about the other goalkeeper not saving it, but it was a lovely header.
He had a lot of time to get to his post.
His positioning looked a bit poor, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Indeed.
Watch your feet. Indeed. Watch your damn feet. Mm-hmm. Did you see the... I mean, you wouldn't have seen it because it was literally just a friend of a friend posting this on Twitter, but a guy called Tom O'Lane on Twitter, when you ask the Ellen Road bar staff for a spare cup and they give you this... And he got handed a Euro 96 England cup.
That is class.
Keep it.
Where's that been hiding?
I saw this as well. It's obviously very, very battered, as you might as you might expect. But that, I mean, that's going to be older than a lot of people at the game.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Been there, what is it, 23 years?
Yeah.
Because obviously Ellen Road was a host stadium.
Yeah.
So it's not like someone's brought it. It was a host stadium, so clearly those cups have been rotting away for 23 years.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I've got a lot of time for that.
Stick it for the dishwasher, keep it.
Also,
it was a cardboard
paper cup.
Don't put it for the dishwasher.
No, put it through the dishwasher. I enjoyed quickly on Sadio Mane. He said when he first joined Liverpool, he said about Jurgen Klopp, he was talking too much, and I said, "Wow, this is going to be tough for me because I'm a little quiet."
Oh.
Actually, it wasn't when he was at Liverpool. It was when he tried to sign him in Germany as well. So
there we are. Did you see the Harvey Elliott thing? I think his ban might be either over or coming to an end now. But he he's 16. Harvey Elliott, I'm sure we're all familiar with him. Got an incredible top knot for a man his age. He posted a video basically just taking the piss out of Harry Kane's voice, and he was banned from all domestic club football for 14 days. A strange punishment! The video, no training for you.
That's a bloody holiday.
The video came out a while ago, but he only just got the punishment.
It's a holiday. 2 weeks off, son.
Yeah. It's funny though, because
he's only 16.
But do not play any beach football while you're there. Actually, it's not domestic, it's fine.
He could end up playing with Harry Kane. It's going to be awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. I think Kane's the forgiving type.
Yeah, I agree.
There we are. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for listening to the Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Jules and Andy will be in your ears tomorrow, of course. Thank you, Luke Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pete Donaldson.
Bye.
Thank you, Jim Gamble.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody.
This was a Stakhanov production.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.